time to wake to sleep with Sleep Science Today, where we learn to sleep well with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to Sleep Science Today, the show where we talk about sleep and the science behind sleeping. My name is Andrew Kolsky. I'm your host. And today I'm excited because we have two guests. So this will be an exciting episode. We have Natalie Elliott Handy, and she is a co-host along with her sister of a podcast called,
Confessions. How about I just say it?
There you go. Do it for me.
Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver. And excellent. We're on UK Health Radio, so that's also helpful.
Excellent, excellent. And then we've got Carrie Alberts, who is known as the Dementia Darling. Carrie, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi. My name, again, is Carrie Alberts, and I am a cheerleader for dementia caregivers, educator and advocate at large for the dementia community, and I am here to cheer you on.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, the reason I asked Natalie and Carrie here today is because sleep is so important in and of itself, but there's so much research going on out there about sleep and its relationship to things like dementia. And when we say dementia, there's different types, and I'm sure Carrie can educate us about that as we get into it. But it's something that you can't look at as separate silos. We have to look at a person as a whole because there's a lot of things going on. So with all of that, we have a lot of stuff to talk about in today's show. And what I wanted to do to start us off is maybe I'll start with Natalie. We'll start with Natalie this time. What got you into dealing with the whole issue of caregivers and sleep and everything in the first place?
Well, thank you so much for having me here. I'm very happy to be here alongside my friend Carrie. And so to talk about caregiving, and simple answer is I became a caregiver 3 years ago when my husband was diagnosed with a head and neck cancer, and it completely turned my world upside down. I will tell everybody who's listening, he is doing well. And so I will give you the ending first. So he is doing well, and we're living with the side effects of his treatments, but we are living with the side effects. And so we are very grateful. But because of that, that's when I got completely I just dove off the deep end into caregiving, which resulted in starting the podcast to support other caregivers because I was lost. I didn't know there were other people like this. I just thought I was a wife trying to support my husband. And then I had all these thoughts, feelings, and emotions. And then when I talked to my sisters, Emily and JJ, they also said they felt the same way. And that was when we started talking about caring for our mom. We've been caregivers for our mom since 2011. Our dad had passed then. And so we started supporting her, but we went full gear in 2019. And that's when life really changed. But this is so common for caregivers is that we don't self-identify. So we don't see resources out there as well. We don't even know to search for them because we wouldn't know the right words to use. And that's why being on a show like this is so critical to help people, one, self-identify as caregivers, and then tell you there's tons of resources out here for you, like my friend Carrie, like our podcast, and podcasts that you're doing to help really support. This is an important critical component, which is sleep.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's so important. I'm glad you're doing that, especially as we have the baby boomer generation kind of moving into that area, taking care of parents and all is a very important role for a lot of people. So thank you for sharing that story. Let's go to Carrie. Carrie, how did you get into this? How did you become the dementia darling?
Yeah. Well, first off, I'm so grateful to be here as well. And thank you for sharing, Natalie, and being who you are, because it's so needed and it makes people feel seen. And that's why I do what I do, too, is I want people to feel seen. My grandmother passed away from dementia and when I was 13 and my dad was her main family caregiver. I didn't know what the heck was going on. I was able to go and when I got to college and finally get some answers and focus and get my bachelor's and master's degrees, focused in gerontology, the study of aging. And through that time, I fell in love with my work, which was working with people living with dementia and being their caregiver. But through that time, I was meeting their family caregivers. I was at an adult daycare center, so I would meet the families, right, when they would come visit. And something that didn't sit right with me was, as Natalie said, many of them didn't identify as a caregiver for many years, and then they got in deep into this progression of dementia with their loved one. And it was not until they were deeper in that they finally realized, oh, I need help, and I need to speak up. And, you know, someone's years in when they get to an adult daycare center, let's say, or a memory care where I've worked in different areas. And I was often the first person to just look at them, hug them and say, first off, thank you. They probably haven't been told thank you in a long time. Specifically, if you have someone living with dementia, they forget to say thank you.
True.
And so I'd say thank you. And I'd say, are you okay? This sucks. Like, are you good? And I'm like, no, they're not, right? They'd cry in my arms and they'd say, oh my God, you're hugging me and not just talking to my person. I'm a person still. And that just, those interactions fueled my desire to, okay, how do I make caregivers feel seen all over the world? And that's why I started Dementia Darling 5.5 years ago on Instagram. And now it's my full-time job, is cheering caregivers, professional and family, on in this journey, and people living with dementia. And as Natalie said, I want to promote, there's joy in the journey. Life is not over. We can't go into this journey as thinking life is over, because we can live with dementia for a long time.
Yes.
So we can be caregivers for a long time. So we can't look at this as a tragedy narrative that society does. So I'm really here to cheer you on, to fight isolation, and to tell you that there is joy. We have to find it though.
Right. So, right.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, leads right into my first question then related to that is, so, you know, you've got people out there who are caregivers, and I'd love for you all to expand upon what exactly does caregiver mean? Because I can think of situations where people are 24/7 caregiver. I can think of where they're part-time. I can think of where they may have to have help. Give us a sense of what is a caregiver actually doing? What are they dealing with? And how is that impacting their own sleep?
Yeah, absolutely. Natalie, I'm going to let you go because you're the family caregiver in this.
That's totally fine. We'll go back and forth.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start with just saying in the United States, there's over 105 million unpaid caregivers. And that was out of a recent study from the RAND group. And of that, there's about, I think, 15.4 million or 14.3 million, excuse me, military caregivers. About 5.4. So Carrie said, hey, I was, you know, a youth. I was 13 when her grandmother had dementia. I'm sure you helped. And there are about 5.4 million of those youth caregivers in the United States. And I will say this, you know, Andrew, all these numbers are understated, again, because people don't self-identify. So I think that's first to kind of establish the numbers that are out there, and they're still very low. We think there's a lot more than that, but that's about 40% of the U.S. population. And so when you think about defining who a caregiver is, it's not as simple. I work in the mental health field, and we have diagnosis, and you have the DSM-5, and there's very clear criteria that says, if you have these things, you are this diagnosis, or you have this diagnosis. And the problem is that with caregiving, it's not that clean. And so for us, caregivers can be individuals of any age. Truly, there are programs in the UK that serve caregiving youth as young as 5. And so absolutely. And there is no upper threshold. If you're living, you can be a caregiver. And I hate to say that. And so it impacts everyone differently. But they are typically, we talk about unpaid caregivers. Yes. We're not necessarily talking about paid caregivers, but unpaid caregivers are typically family members like myself, like I'm a spouse. It could be children. It could be relatives. It could be family friends. And sometimes it can just be a neighbor. a neighbor simply helping out. And here lately, you know, there's a lot of folks when you think about informal or unknown caregivers, it's kind of interesting. Think about your church groups and community groups that go and support individuals who may have a recent diagnosis. Well, they're helping those caregivers. So there are caregivers to caregivers. So there's not any specific task that really that says that's the switch and now you're a caregiver. And right. So, and caregiving is a dual role kind of thing. So I'm a wife and a caregiver. Some days I'm both. Some days I lean into caregiving. Sometimes I'm just a wife. And it really just depends on the needs of the individual, how much these different roles kind of cross over into each other. I'll let Carrie talk about more all the other good stuff.
So well said, Natalie. It's so true. There isn't this one thing, you know, and oftentimes, as you said too, you just think like, oh, I'm just being a daughter. I'm just being a granddaughter. Mm-hmm. I'm helping. Like, that's what you do. But it really is a role. And I want people to recognize what they do because it's powerful. And not everyone steps up. So we need to really recognize and be proud of us for stepping up and doing these things and having that intuition to help. But yeah, there's so many different types of caregivers. Long distance caregivers, they are full time. Their brain doesn't turn off. You know, we need to give that credit. You know, I hear all the time in when your loved one moves into a community, let's say, those caregivers say, you know, the professionals might often think, oh, that family caregiver's off the hook now. They're good. You know, they get to go back to their life, be the daughter all full time again. No, they don't. They're the one getting called at midnight when someone falls. They're the one that comes in and showers them because the staff can't do it. They're on 24/7. And so we need to talk about that mental load, and that plays into our sleep.
Absolutely.
And that leads into all those things are all connected. But we really need to recognize how much people do, and they don't have to be physically present to be a full-time, you know, and be in that. And but we do have to recognize, as Natalie said, those numbers, which is mind-blowing. And I don't think people truly understand how many people are in these situations. But, you know, we think, and again, we're lacking in a lot of research, but about, you know, over 11 million unpaid caregivers of dementia, specifically in the U.S. And again, I think that is low for our estimate. I don't think that is correct necessarily. And as you said, with, you know, it's all these ages. And with dementia, it doesn't just affect the person, it affects the entire family. So you have, you know, maybe one person living with dementia and then six caregivers that were affected too. And I'm going to double down because Natalie did say that there's foundations that help people, young kids as young as five. My friend Lorenzo's house.
Oh, I love them.
Oh, I'm obsessed. Lorenzo's house is virtual. It's worldwide, and they support younger onset families. And they have as young as four-year-olds with a parent with dementia.
And we'll share these resources, Andrew. Yes. We'll share resources. Happy to do that in the show notes.
Yeah. Yes, please. Yes, I'll put those down in the notes for the show. I really appreciate that. So, you know, I don't even know where to start because it is heavy and I've dealt with it. You two have dealt with it. So I know exactly what you're saying. And I guess the thing that I'm, you know, interested in here is some people become caregivers, not because they choose to be the caregiver, but they just it just happens, right? You've got to take care of certain things, especially if you're a spouse or a parent or whatever it may be. And so you're trying to, you go from living your life, maybe working at a job, doing whatever you do, and slowly but surely you become more and more involved in the caretaking. And when you start talking about dementia or similar types of issues, you have real issues in terms of people can be wandering. They may leave the house and wander in the street, you know, so you have to be really careful to be watching over someone. What do you do when you're trying to sleep? You know, you got to get sleep sometimes, but you got to watch over things. What do you do?
Poor dementia caregivers, I don't think they know what sleep is many times, unfortunately. These poor caregivers are, one, the mental load is keeping them up, right? You can't let go of stress and just fall asleep happily every night. That's really hard. And then, yes, the sleep disturbances in their loved one. If their loved one is living with them and they're on alert, right, their brain's not going to turn off if they're listening for that door opening. They're listening for, you know, whatever it may be to be there. I had a family caregiver, I'll never forget it. She slept on the floor outside of her mom's door every night, so her mom would step on her so she wouldn't miss it, because mm-hmm. her mom went out the door so many times. Right. And that's why I'm really passionate about technology, because technology is going to help caregivers get a little bit of peace of mind, because we can have, you know, a camera, or we can have alarms, whatever it may be. And, you know, people are, you know, we want to age in place longer, so we have to make our home safer. And so this, as you said, you know, it starts off, you're helping out little by little, but with a progressive brain change, you know, progressive change of someone's, you know, dementia, they're just getting worse and worse, unfortunately, and they're having more and more issues. And so it comes to a point where you are literally 24/7, they can't be alone for 24/7. So right. How does a caregiver go from that to having to probably leave their job if they can't afford to mm-hmm. have someone come in, right? That's not, mm-hmm. I mean, how expensive it is to get help is wild. So then they're dealing mm-hmm. with the financial stress that goes into, you know, the affecting their sleep. Mm-hmm. But so many parts of dementia in turn affect the sleep of the person living with dementia. The sundowning that they may deal with in the end of the day, where their circadian rhythm is off, and then they're up all night and then sleeping during the day, let's say. In later stages of Alzheimer's, you see someone sleep for most of the day, and so that's really intense, and then it's hard to get them to sleep, you know, at other times when it's more appropriate. But there are a lot of issues. And then, of course, you know, don't even get me started with like medication effects and different things like that. And if we're not getting enough exercise, we're not going to sleep at night. There's so many things against these caregivers and the people living with dementia. It's so hard. And then on top of it, you know, it's like, okay, so I'm watching someone with this brain change that I love is progressing through their dementia. I'm getting poor sleep in turn because of it. Am I going to now get dementia? So now they're also living with that stress. And they're like, I know this is bad for me, but I can't change my situation either. So it's just, it's a snowball. It's a lot of things.
That's just listening to us talking about it, it's overwhelming. But I'm going to stop us for 1 second here. I need to take a quick commercial break, and we'll come right back and pick up from where we've left off. We'll be right back on Sleep Science Today.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, we're back on Sleep Science Today. My name is Andrew Kolsky. We are talking with Natalie Elliott Handy, and we're talking with Carrie, the dementia darling. So, you know, we're talking about the realities of people, caregivers, people living with dementia, and sleep. And, you know, Carrie, you had mentioned the fact that the concept of sundowning and people with dementia, their rhythms being off and being up at night and all this, which then means the caregiver has to be up at night. So any practical tips or things that people can do?
Yeah, I mean, first off, I need to just let it be said, because this is so important, speaking anything about dementias and in anything in life, we're all different. And not there's not a one-size-fits-all, especially in dementia care. Because there are over 120 causes of dementia. And it's so we usually only hear like Alzheimer's, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Can you imagine?
Right.
That's one of 120.
Wow.
Think about how many people feel isolated just because if their person doesn't have Alzheimer's, they're like, well, what am I dealing with then? You know, and all the different things up against them. So I just want to put that out there. So, you know, you might be writing down these tips and then they might not work. do not get discouraged. It's just, unfortunately, the way it goes. We do not have a one size fits all. But I do know that, you know, there's some things that can help with a lot of people. It's helped, and just trying different things and not getting discouraged. And you know, if it doesn't work one night, it might work another time. It might work deeper into their disease. There's you know, ways we have to kind of trial and error. But it's really important to pay attention to the lighting in the house and to make sure that, first off, you know, one of a really big issue at nighttime too that can lead to a lot of bigger sleep issues and things like that is, you know, obviously we have to go potty at night, and then that leads to more falls. So making sure that we have, you know, lighting in the house that's appropriate so they can get to the bathroom at night is really important, and to help with maybe hallucinations of seeing shadows and things that can be scary. So we want to kind of set them up for success in that way. We see with Lewy body dementia that people have some really bad nightmares and hallucinations. So being aware of kind of what their room looks like can help them, you know, situate to be more comfortable. Familiar objects, comforting objects, correct lighting can really help. But also the lighting when someone is sundowning. So as the day is changing, making sure it's well lit in the house to keep them kind of awake during those times, and then like lowering the light throughout as we go deeper into the night, and then, you know, kind of indicating, okay, we're going to get sleepy now. Kind of use that lighting to be a cue. And, you know, setting them up for sleep just like we would want to, kind of having like a nighttime routine of sorts where the caregiver and the person living with dementia can both do things, you know, where even if it's watching something really comforting on TV, maybe some beautiful classical music with scenery, and you get to just calm down. That's why I love Zinnia TV. It's TV made for people living with dementia that doesn't have any plot lines to follow, any stressors. You don't have to worry about a YouTube commercial coming up and screaming at them. It's going to be relaxing. You know, whether it be, you know, maybe they like to take a hot shower at night. Maybe that was something they did in their life, you know, and that calms them. Is it having the stuffed animal they've had their whole life, you know, giving comfort objects, having, you know, a hot drink maybe a couple hours before, anything that can maybe signify to their body it's time to relax can help. So that soft music, you know, relaxing aromatherapy even can really be helpful. And then something I also like utilizing tech is to just help them to kind of understand where they are throughout their day, because sometimes people, you know, might see the time on a clock and think, oh, it's 3 and it's like 3 in the afternoon, but in their head it's 3 a.m. let's say, you know, they do not understand. So I love the clocks that say, you know, 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and, you know, gives them some way to put themselves in place and time and help them adjust a little bit. That can be really helpful, especially in earlier and mid stages when they're able to, you know, look at those clocks and really understand. And then again, just making sure we're not with the drinks and stuff, like not as much caffeine and things like that can really help. So if your loved one's a coffee drinker, just do the decaf after a certain time in the morning. They don't have to know. Just change to decaf.
You know, I'll say this, Carrie, it seems like a lot of the recommendations are best practices for everyone.
I mean, for
the most part, it feels so obvious. People are going to be, I know people are probably sitting here like, well, that feels Captain Obvious. And I always think about caregiving similar to like childbirth and when in those first couple of months and year or so, but a woman's body, for example, is made to go without sleep, and because of our bodies biologically are made for that. However, our bodies are not necessarily like attuned to the caregiving side. And so the average amount of time, I'm going to throw a couple of stats out. The average amount of time to be in a caregiver is 5 years. Well, I can tell you right now, my dad passed in 2011. And again, like I said, we've been in it hot and heavy. Like really in it and every day interrupting our day. And that's the only way I'm going to describe it. It interrupts your day. It interrupts your pattern, your normalcy. It interrupts. And we've been doing that for 5 years. And I don't even feel like it was yesterday when we got the first call when my mom was having a crisis. And so I don't know where the time's gone. And so it makes sense, because typically chronic stress and unpredictability really impacts cognitive functioning of the caregiver themselves. It's going to impact not only your sleep, but your ability to think and reason, because you're living in this crisis state and your emotions are just up and down and up and down. And for the statistics from the AARP talks about the average amount of time a person will provide care during a week is about 26 hours. And for an individual with dementia is 44. Now, I laugh at that because I'm like, there's 256 hours in a week.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure all 256, including those, are sleeping hours as well.
Yes.
Right. We're going to be touched and have the opportunity for all of those, unless you have resource to have people come in and you're either paying them to, you have family members that are taking shifts and things like that. Because that's one of the strategies as well, is how can you bring people in to support you as a caregiver and the individual that you're caring for, to give you a break and a respite, which is, I'm like, respite for me is like nap break. I mean, my younger sister, when she was caring for my mom full time, she had no other people because my sister and I were long distance. Emily lived with. And then we had family members who were close by. So the three types of kind of caregiving that you can do. And Emily, if my mom laid down to take a nap, Emily laid down to take a nap. That's what reminded me so much of children. And so it's very common for mothers of newborns, especially, to lay down and take a nap. And so, and I'm all about my European friends. They are siesting every day from 2 to 4. Those people have got it on point. We have just not caught up in the United States. And so I will say, I think there's some similarities, but we need to be mindful of how long this is going to be. And it might not be a short term. Now, for some people, it's a short term. For some people, it may be short term. But for most, it is a longer term, and it really will impact your daily functioning. And that is going to impact your sleep.
Yeah.
Oh, no doubt.
And the guilt, though, of like, because I know I caregivers all the time, they're like, I know I'm supposed to sleep when they are, but I can't because I have all these things
to do.
Like, and so that guilt is so heavy. And so both of us, I think, want to say to you, you are allowed.
Take a nap.
You are allowed to take a nap. Sometimes we just need to be, you know, told, like, it's okay. And well, I promise you, it's okay.
If you forget to brush your teeth, your teeth are not going to fall out. Just don't brush your teeth every day. I mean, right. I'm going to tell you, there were some days when my husband was in active treatment that we were both so emotionally, we were both physically and emotionally exhausted that our bodies were forcing us to say, you must rest. And so we just agreed, like, we're going to lay in bed. We're going to relax. We're going to do the things that help us get back to really a balanced state to bring us down from that crisis state, from whether it's chemotherapy treatments or it's radiation treatments, news that you may get. I mean, that's the thing is, again, I go back to chronic unpredictability, because you are getting, something is happening every day. You are not fortunate you try to do routine as much as possible, which helps with sleep, because that just allows it, like, we do this at this time, we do this at this time. Not being so inflexible that you can't move, and which is hard for people who, especially I think with dementia, but it's hard for all of us to have shifts in our schedule. Allowing for flexibility, but keeping that bedtime sacred, keeping nap time sacred. And so if you only get, you know, we took a shower, we went to our appointments, and we got fed today and got our meds. If you got those things done, you did a great job.
That's a win.
You won today. And tomorrow you may do more. But today you did a great job.
Wow. Wow. Well, I want to go back and ask for a clarification on one thing that Carrie had said before, because I think that I know I want to know this. So you were talking about, for the person living with dementia and sleep, and you said, you know, you want them to have things that are familiar, but you also want to make sure that if they're up in the middle of the night, they need to use a restroom, then you want to be safe. So here was the thought that came to me. A lot of times, people with dementia tend to be older. They've lived in the same place for a while. When they've lived in the same place, sometimes they kind of build up some clutter and things like that. So if you have someone who has a bedroom that has built up clutter over time, is it better to leave it like that for familiarity, or is it better to clean some of it so that they don't trip over it?
Absolutely. That is one of the hardest things, right, is balance, that balancing act for caregivers, is making sure we have the autonomy and that individuality they've always had, but also keeping them safe. And at the end of the day, keeping them safe is number one. That I think that's just the number one thing. And sometimes we have to be the bad guy, and we're not the bad guy. We're just keeping them safe. So please remember, if you're the bad guy, quote unquote, you're really the good guy. I know what you're doing. And I thank you for taking the bad rap, you know, to keep your person safe. And so, you know, there's a balance there again. So if there's a lot of clutter, if that's in their way, and you have to start taking little by little out, if it's like a really big thing for them, do it little by little, so it's not as jarring to them, for sure. But if it's, you know, if you're dealing with really bad stuff, you got to get that out, because falls are unfortunately deadly. Falls are a really big deal. And so we want to set them up for success. We can't ever 100% save someone from falls, right? Please never believe a company when they say, your person will never fall here. That is a lie. You cannot guarantee someone's not going to fall,
even
if you do not have dementia, okay? So please don't believe that. I've seen that in communities, and it breaks my heart. But setting them up for success as much as possible, making sure we don't have, you know, a lot of older adults have those huge rugs. We got to get rid of those. And I know it's a fight. I just had a caregiver that said she fought for months with her grandma. She would not give it up, but she broke her hip on it, and she still wouldn't give it up. So sometimes you just got to put down your foot and take those things away, unfortunately, but keeping around as much familiarity as possible. And if they do live in their home and they're having they've lived in that home forever, they're having trouble maybe getting to the bathroom, use signage. Use a, you know, make a sign that literally looks like the bathroom, you know, symbol, put that on the door, whatever you need to do to help them, you know, keep up with that. And then also, sometimes they get to, you know, you get to a point in the journey where it's too stressful and difficult to get to the bathroom at night. So we do use a commode in the room, maybe. We do have to bring in that. And that's totally fine. Also, using specific incontinence supplies, you know, can really help in that and lessen the nighttime stress. That's why I love, like, for men specifically, the quick wrap, the quick change wrap, because men can, like, sleep through being changed with that. And they, you know, and then the caregiver doesn't have to lift them up and hurt their back, and it's a whole thing. Or using peel away sheets, so you're not having to do the whole bed, but just ripping off one top sheet.
Those are magical. I'm not going to lie to you. They're magical. I love that idea.
I've never even heard of that, but that sounds like something
really
that,
cool.
Wow. Well, let me stop us again for another break, and then I want to hear more about that
one. It's already time for a break.
It's already time for a second break. So we'll be right back on Sleep Science Today.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
All right, we're back on Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. Just before the break, we were talking about something called peel-away sheets. I have never heard of these. Please, please, please tell me, what is this?
Yeah, it's actually really cool. The founder, he was on Shark Tank.
Like, yeah.
This was a big deal. Yeah. I met him at CES last year. It's really cool. And so they're these disposable bed sheets, the bottom bed sheet, you know, underneath. And when someone has, you know, an incontinence overnight, you can just rip off the top sheet and then there's a new one. So it's just, you peel
them
away.
There's only about five underneath each one of them. And there's multiple brands, but the peel-aways are the ones that are pretty commonly known.
Yeah.
And they have them for all size beds, which is really nice. And they're not super difficult to put on. I've actually had some because I was sent a sample because I wanted to see what they were like. Yeah. And I was like, these are great. These are great.
It's so smart. And I've even seen people, because you can buy the ones for like camping to take them traveling when you maybe worries you if you're at a hotel. But I just think that's such a peace of mind. And it's like a dignity thing, right? If you're always being like, oh, I got to change the whole bed because you did this again, or, you know, making it a whole thing. And it's less work for the caregiver, for sure. But, you know, many caregivers struggle with having to change the sheets maybe multiple times a night and having to then get the smell out. And it's a whole thing. And incontinence is just part of life. It's, you
it
know,
is.
You don't have to necessarily have dementia to have incontinence. It's,
no, you don't. Right. Welcome to menopause, Carrie. Welcome to menopause.
Can't wait.
Preach, girl.
Can't wait.
It's
counting down the days.
It is fantastic. That's why I love my friends at Tena. I'm like, oh, you guys are my fans. I will say this, Andrew. We talked a little bit, and Carrie mentioned the rugs. And and I know also had another guest that we had, Consuela, love her. She talked about, she's an occupational therapist. She talked about it as an OT. A lot of folks don't see where the trips and falls and things like that are, in that the hazards are in their house. Like, she is a professional who could go into anybody else's house and see it. And she didn't realize how low her mom's couch was, how low certain furniture was. And so the having to get up, the toilet is another big thing.
Oh, yeah.
What are safety things? Because here's the thing. People may say, I'm struggling with the accommodations to know about sleep. But let me tell you, you have somebody who is injured, they are not sleeping well. And and we need them to sleep so I can sleep, so I can support them the next day. It is absolutely a ripple effect. And so, you know, I would tell all your listeners now, these are things that JJ and I have been talking about, is really about aging in place. People have better health outcomes when they are able to live in their home, but they also cannot be isolated. So that's really important. It is finding the balance of having individuals who have contact. There was a time when my mom did not have, she wouldn't see people for 4 or 5 days when my younger sister had lived out of state, and then we all lived out of state. And so she couldn't drive because she has Parkinson's and it wasn't safe, which was a difficult conversation. And, but I think it's really important that we want individuals to be able to age in place for, because it's healthier. And because, I mean, congregate settings, I used to run for congregate setting for children. It really is, you know, it's, there's MRSA, there's illness, it's more contagious. There's, I mean, we just know that. And people are happier because it's familiar, it's comfortable, it's their community, and it also allows for independence. And again, overall health and wellness is going to impact your sleep. Sleep is a huge component in that.
Huge. When I wanted to just piggyback on that too a little bit. It's, you know, in community settings, really hard, right? Because you're dealing with a lot of different people with different sleep schedules and, you know, different types of dementia, all the things. There's a new tech that came out from a company, Composure, and they have the sleep blanket, and it's in memory cares. They're doing testing, and it's incredible. It's like changing the game by using certain sound waves. I think it's pink waves, and it's literally putting people to sleep.
I love it. I need one of those for my bed. I don't care. I don't care if I have it or not. You had me at sound waves.
Right, right. So, like, utilizing these non-pharmacological approaches and utilizing tech is really cool. So keep your eye out for that. And then there's things, you know, I just saw at CES, this company Wesper, I believe it's called. And they are, like, creating this really cool tech where you can, like, you put it on your head and you sleep, and it's at home. They can send it to you, and then you get all the stats on your sleep. And if you, you know, if you need to look at sleep apnea, because we know going to sleep clinics for someone with dementia, that's going to be pretty difficult.
But that's a nightmare.
If you can do testing at home, that's really helpful.
Yeah.
And then another thing that just popped in my head that I like for, that can also help people is those weighted blankets.
Weighted blankets are good for so many things. So many things.
And if you think about it, that's why, and I know, as Natalie said too, like, I know we're kind of going in different places, but it all is connected to sleep. And and how you were saying, you know, being in the home and the isolation part, this is great. This is actually a product from the UK. It's called The Hug. And it's the first product that is created for older adults to simulate the feeling of a hug. And it has a heartbeat inside. And I've seen so many people living with dementia fall asleep with that, hugging them, because they're only being touched when they're going potty.
Oh my gosh.
Human touch is so important. And we are all meant to be in relationship, I'm telling you.
Yes, and we're supposed to, they say like 12 hugs a day to be healthy humans. I'm not getting that. And so we need those kind of tech to help, you know, supplement these really important parts of our lives, which in turn leads to better sleep outcomes and better life in general.
Wow. Well, and I will say, I've read stuff about hugs, and this is so interesting because it's so important, but being intentional about hugging, for if you can hug someone for 15 to 30 seconds, it absolutely has a calming effect on you, and it really is regulating. It is really, and so I'm thinking about caregivers who are feeling stressed, who are feeling overwhelmed, and they, like, you feel it in your shoulders. Like, caregivers don't realize it, but if you, when you start focusing on certain parts of your body is going to tell you, hey, you're not okay. And typically, like, I carry my stress in my shoulders, and I haven't realized that my shoulders have been in my ears all day, and I've been so struggling. And then I'm like, why do my shoulders? And you'll feel it at night when you lay down. And so I will say this, one of my favorite, this is the thing that I am so happy that my husband and I bought. We don't get reimbursed by these folks, but we have one of the vibrating bases for our mattresses. We have a Sleep Number, and I'm going to tell you right now, that vibrating base has been a godsend, because my husband has sleep issues. So Jason has chronic pain, and as in addition to his side effects, and so he's always had sleep issues. And so he would wake up, and he'll get on a run where he might have 3 to 4 hours of sleep a night for upwards of 10 to 14 days. He is a bear to live with. And we argue more. He's got lower frustration tolerance, and it's terrible. But I'm going to tell you, since we got that bed and that vibrating base, and you don't have to have this bougie mattress. If you can get a vibrating base that allows, like, you wake up in the middle of the night, I use it to go to sleep at night. And if either of us wake up in the middle of the night, we turn it on, I am right back to sleep. It is absolutely fantastic. So it's kind of simulating that piece of it. So it'd be interesting to see, Carrie, I don't know if any studies has been out around dementia and having any type of that vibrating, but it's the consistency. Think about a noise machine. There is a consistent sound. Yeah. And so, and it is the sound in addition to the sensation, because our body, we have our five senses. Our body is sensitive to that. Mm-hmm. And then are you sleeping with, we have a humidifier to help him with his throat, because he has, his saliva was affected. And so it impacts his sleep because he feels like he's choking. So the extra humidity, but then we pour eucalyptus in it. And then the eucalyptus. So you're hitting multiple sensories, and that really helps with sleeping. And I'm going to tell you, I wish we had had it when he was in active treatment. It would have helped me sleep better. I sleep better. So that's just another little puppy tip.
No, I love that, because with dementia, the way to really get people to engage and break through apathy is touching on all the senses. And so I love that. So that's going to set people up, both the caregiver, both care partners, right? Both
people everybody
for success. And it's just so important. I love that. Thank you for sharing. I'm going to look into the
vibrating. That's great. I'm going to tell you right now. I am a better person. I just tell everybody, I'm like, I don't care where you get your base from. It's just fantastic.
I love that.
See, I am a child of the 60s. So this is before you all were born. But when you would go to hotels, Holiday Inn was the big hotel back then. And you would go and you put a quarter in the little thing by the bed, and the bed would vibrate. It was like a jackhammer. You know, it was not a comfortable vibrating bed.
It was inappropriate. I think the vibrating beds were inappropriate and the use of them. But now it's so interesting because the other thing is because the base adjusts. The base allows you should not be necessarily sleeping on your back. It's not actually ergonomically correct. And so how do you, I know that you talk about this all the time, Andrew, but how do you have that optimal sleep environment for the person that you're caring for and yourself? And so you need it, like, if you're worried about, like, so he has to have the bed up just a little bit, the legs, the pressure off the back of your legs. And if you're a caregiver, you have been running tail all day long. Your legs are tired, and to have that pressure and not have those pressure points hit will also, in my mind, it helps me to sleep. A lot of my own strategies are just from my own lived experience and what I hear from other people that I then try. Not everything works for everybody, but why not try them? What's the worst that happened? And multiple times, because we didn't learn to walk the first time we got up.
Right. That's a really important point.
That's so true. Thank you for saying that. And I wanted to add to that, because with dementia specifically, something that you need to pay attention to, kind of what I said with the taking showers at night, like paying attention to their lifelong habits. Mm. So if someone's not sleeping at night, but they worked the graveyard shift their whole life, makes sense. think about that. That's why it's so important to look at that, because, you know, some people, I met a man that he wasn't sleeping in his bed. We found out he slept in a recliner his whole life. He just didn't sleep in a bed. So we had to get a recliner, and then he slept great, you know? Wow. So really pulling from that and not assuming we know what they prefer.
Right. Wow. Well, I'm gonna share two other products that I found to be helpful that are really simple and easy for people to get. And then from there, we got to wrap up, because we're already out of time here. But,
oh my gosh, we've had the most fun.
Oh, this is great. So here's my two products. And I actually there used to be a store called Radio Shack that some people might remember. I had to go and create these because they didn't exist. Now you can buy them all over the internet. One of the products was a door alarm, so that if the door opens, you get a chime, an alarm, a horn, something, because that really helps. Because if you're sleeping and then you've got someone kind of up and wandering, at least this way you'll know that they're going out the door. And the second thing I found is there's so many of them now. Small lights with a motion detector, not a big bright light, but small lights. And what I do is on the base of the bed, put the lights and put the motion detector. So if someone steps out of bed, then they get enough light that they can see they're not going to trip on something, but it's not this bright light that's going to wake them up. Those things you can buy, you know, anywhere these days.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Can I piggyback?
Yes, okay. Yes.
So I do a presentation on dementia-friendly homes, and it's just so important, all the things you're saying, absolutely. And making sure that, you know, of course, yeah, that is just so important. And that's what I was going to say. Sorry. The bed alarm. So like you said, yes, there are alarms for like the door, but there's a pad you can put on their mattress and it will alert you when they get up. So if they're a really big fall risk, you can get there hopefully by the time they maneuver their legs out, you know, or something. So those are really great. And then just because I wanted to share the newest product I was sent, I'm not being paid for this or anything. None of these. I'm just sharing because I love them and caregivers need to know about these.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to say also the things that we're saying, that we're shouting out, a lot of them were created by caregivers for caregivers, because those are the innovators out there. And this is one of them. So here, I'm going to ruin my makeup.
Fun.
This is the Wuggle.
Oh my God, you're so cute.
This is the Wuggle, made by a FTD caregiver.
So describe that for the radio audience.
This is like a beanie that is over my head, and it's creating pressure on my eyes. Oh. So she was an FTD caregiver, couldn't sleep, and one night she had it and put a big a blanket around her head and just tied it, and she had the best sleep of her life, she said, for years, because of the pressure. So she created the Wuggle for caregivers, and then it comes with a little thing that you can put in the in the fridge, and it can go here, and it smells like eucalyptus or lavender, and it can go here. But I've been sleeping with this, and the pressure on my eyes and keeping the light out has been fabulous.
I'm going to need a Wuggle. And I like the name just because it's happy.
Yes.
I just like the name because it's happy.
But FTD caregiver, you know, frontal temporal dementia caregiver. That's
Sure. Well, and I'll say this just our base has a baby light on it, so so here's the thing: you can spend a couple $1,000s because the bases are normally range between $1,000 and more, or you can go on Marketplace or wherever you can find like discount stuff, because people get rid of stuff all the time. So be smart with your money, because we as caregivers know that it's expensive. Yeah. And the average caregiver family spends between $7,000 and $10,000. And that's actually dependent on race at times, sadly. And so our Caucasian friends spend about $7,500 a year, although I'm pretty sure we spend more than that, still underreported. But as our folks, our brown and black friends also spend actually more than that. And it financially impacts. So look for tips and tricks. And I think there's so many groups online that you can that are caregiver groups that you can just join and watch and or ask. Because I needed something and I reached out to Carrie and I'm like, Carrie, tell me the best thing for timed medication, because I have a dementia family that we're working with and they're not taking their medication on time. And she sent me three different options at three different price points.
Wow. Well, I need to stop us there because we are way over time, but you're going to send me the resources and things so I can put them in the notes of the show. So those of you listening, you can go to our YouTube show or you can go on to the podcast on Podbean. I have up the notes of the show, so I'll put that all in there. We're so over time. I need to run. Carrie and Natalie, thank you so much. We love having you on.
Thanks for having us. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, sleep science today and sleep better tonight.